Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Hello, I'm Stuart Alexander. Once again, I'd like to welcome our listeners to Left Turn with Stuart Alexander. A little bit, our program is starting a little bit different from what you usually hear when we introduce our program. We usually have the music, the international, starting the program today. A few of those technical difficulties that we're still dealing with, but we'll have that taken care of. But today we have Alice Horace. He's joining the program once again. And today we're going to be talking about the mainstream media, Facebook, and censorship. We've dealt with this subject before, where we have talked much about how propaganda works. And Al, once again, I'd like to thank you for joining the program.
It's good to be back.
Al, this is a subject that you've dealt with before, and when we look at the mainstream media propaganda, the way it works in this country, we can see it working at levels that we have never seen in our lifetime. I'm probably more than twice your age, Al, but I haven't seen it to this level in my lifetime, and it's even beyond the levels that we had seen during the time of World War One and also World War Two, when the Germans, they became the masters of propaganda. But when you consider the way that propaganda is being used to manipulate the minds of people in this country today, Al, we can see that this country, in the U.S., it is being taken to levels that we have never experienced. So, Al, this is what we're going to be talking about today. You hadn't even mentioned this before the program started about censorship that you've been experiencing yourself right there in Florida. Could you share that with our listening audience today?
Right. I mean, it used to be you could have a Block Talk radio show and say anything you want. But now they're getting you even there, hacking. We've experienced that ourselves. But at the college, they limit your free speech. But the thing is, they don't explicitly tell you that. They have this secret policy that they don't bring out until they try to suspend you like they did me, called the the acceptable use policy. So that's what they tried to use against me. All of a sudden, there's a secret policy that they never informed me of, that I never signed on to or agreed to. I said some things that they didn't like, and had a radio show on campus, and they called me Controversial Al. That was my radio name, and that was what I talked about on the show, was political stuff. And I had co-hosts, and they talked about other stuff, sometimes silly stuff about entertainment. But my realm was always political, and my co-hosts supported what I was saying. Didn't necessarily agree with what I was saying, and sometimes we'd have debates, and it was fine. It was respectful. We respected each other. But some people in the administration got pissed off. They thought I crossed the line, and they informed me that because of acceptable use policy that I would be temporarily suspended upon investigation. And I'm not a quitter, so I'm back at my college, but under conditions. And one of those conditions is to go once a month to a counselor in a faraway campus, which is very inconvenient for me because I don't have a car. So today I went to that meeting for the first time, and I've been gone several times. And I, for the first time, I was a little bit late, and they said, you're going to have to reschedule. And that was really, really pissed me off. And, you know, I have good rapport with the girls that work there. They speak Spanish. And I didn't want the counselor to understand. So I started speaking to them in Spanish, and I told them. I said, do you know the real reason why I'm coming here every month and have to see this counselor? Because it's something I said on the air. There's no free speech in this country, and there's more free speech in Venezuela than the United States. And I got up and walked out. And I had to reschedule. But I'm not the only one. I'm hearing more and more cases of student activists that have been discriminated against and banned or welcomed back with, you know, conditions to their colleges. And this is an ongoing issue, the attack on free speech. I mean, there's been professors that have lost their tenureship and been thrown out of colleges, like that Palestinian American recently, or Norman Finkelstein, for that matter, who I've met. I mean, there's been professors that have been discriminated against. So you can imagine what they're doing to students when they're considered too controversial.
Right. Al, you know, we can see that propaganda, well, censorship is being taken to all sorts of levels over the last, more than the past decade. And much of that, we start seeing that it was very blatant, the censorship, after what took place in New York in September the 11th of 2001. Now,
right.
I might mention, just going by, back a little bit into the much of what we have seen taking place in the last 20 years or so, the way censorship has been working. Just look at when we were at, during the time of the Vietnam War, and we had Lyndon Baines Johnson, LBJ. He was saying that he wanted to have he wanted to have transparency where people could where they could have transparency with the news. So when that war took place in Vietnam, and of course that was about the same time when television was really being introduced in the homes of millions of Americans. I remember when we first, my family had our first television in 1950. It was 1957. That was an exciting time.
Right.
But now here we could see events taking place, you know, whether it was inaugurations or whether it was events that were happening in other states. What was going on in the South with the dogs attacking many of the people in the civil rights movement, we were able to see this right on television. But Lyndon Johnson, in his great society, he wanted to make it where people could receive information firsthand and take the cameras even out into the battlefields.
That backfired.
And when he did that, Al, now people were actually able to see war for the first time like they had never seen before right there on television. So now we saw the firsthand reports of soldiers dying in battle. We saw the Viet Cong, when they were in the field and in the trenches and what was taking place. We saw the B-52s when they were flying over and dropping tens of thousands of bombs on populated areas. But Al, what it did is it created a very negative connotation in the minds of millions of people that war is ugly. And then they start looking, start demonizing the government, the U.S. government, because they could see that it was only building up the military industrial complex to the tune of billions of dollars. They could see the profits that were made from war, and they could see the tens of thousands of young men and women that were dying as a result of war, and also the civilians. So
they had the draft.
Al,
you had Eisenhower
What has happened since then? The system that we live in, they start realizing we made a mistake. We gave people too much information. They start seeing the corruption of war. They start seeing how we have been falsifying this information so we can sell them, give them a bill of sale to go into war. Now, here we just move right on up to the 21st century. Now, much of this information is being blocked from the minds of Americans. When you turn on the television now, Al, we see game shows. We see football games, baseball games, the World Series. We see, you know, we're already anticipating the Super Bowl. We're getting, they're already doing Christmas advertising so people can see what gifts and whatever to buy for their families and like that. Al, why wars are raging all around the world. So, Al, do you see the connection yourself, or am I just seeing something that millions of Americans are missing here?
No, I mean, I think there is a direct correlation, and Chomsky talks a lot about this, between the obsession over sports and the, you know, distracting the masses, kind of like the gladiators under Rome, you know, keeping the masses happy and, you know, just enjoying the sports. Now, I'm not knocking sports in general, but there's just this fanaticism and obsession with the sports that's encouraged within the culture, which is why it's
right.
important to have a counterculture so that the masses can you know, actually pay attention to what's going on in the world and see about how to change their government and change the world. So, yeah,
well,
I mean,
Al, did
after
not
Vietnam,
the Germans
they changed
and
the
Greeks,
way they conducted media.
Did not the Germans, the Greeks, and the Romans do the same thing while people were looking at, you know, business?
Well, yeah, I mean,
sport?
look at the Olympics. Actually, Hitler was
right.
enraged about the Olympics before World War II started because a black American
right.
won it. So that really
and he was already building his
racial
war
theory.
Machine.
Because the Treaty of Versailles, you know, he reversed all those war reparations that Germany had to pay from World War One, and used all that extra money and money from some international bankers to make Germany strong militarily again, like it was when the Austro-Hungarian Empire was around.
Now, we can see, just going back to what you were saying about the Treaty of Versailles and what was taking place then, and we could see that Joseph Goebbels, he was the minister, he was the information minister, the minister of propaganda during that time, and when he was appointed by to lead the propaganda machine, people don't realize that even when the Olympics took place in Germany, they were already preparing for war. They were already preparing. They were already laying out information. I mean, putting together their information of in regards to how they were going to proceed into launching an invasion into the European theater. But now, Al, we're going back to March of 1933, this was mm-hmm. already the foundation of that. And then we could see the result of that, of what took place in Poland and the way that they were able to advance into war from that point. Now, there's a correlation, Al, what has even taken place here in this country, not only during the Vietnam War, what happened in Iran, what happened in Iraq, what happened in Afghanistan. People, while they were so distracted about information about 9/11, when they were distracted about, you know, terrorism, because you could see it every day when you looked at the newspapers, whether you looked at, listened to radio or to television. They were distracted while this country was already preparing to go into multiple theaters of war.
Let me ask you: when they were portraying uh-huh. Vietnam on the TV, did they call it embedding, like embedding the troops?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Did they call it that then too? Because they changed how they went about that when they invaded Iraq, but they probably called it the same thing. Yeah. But when you were talking
about, you know, it's very interesting how they. It's very
yeah.
interesting how they lie to the public, how, you know, people buy into these lies. Where I was talking
course.
To someone, of course, I go to work every day like all of our listeners, and I was talking to someone, I was saying that, you know, well, we already have boots on the ground. Well, we don't have no boots on the ground. They just have some advisors over there. I said, no, it's boots on the ground.
Right.
But, you know, when people don't realize that when you
That's
look at situations...
With Syria now, they said, we're just going to send in advisors to Syria now. You know, we're just going
right.
to send advisors to assist the aerial bombardment. Pretty soon it's going to turn into boots on the ground again. You know, it's a similar
right.
strategy. But
well, the thing is,
I
was talking about Iraq at the time when I was talking with this individual. And they say, there's no boots
on
the ground.
Oh, you mean recently?
We don't have any troops in Iraq. Pardon
yeah, because in Vietnam they started out as advisors as well, yeah, under Kennedy.
Right. And so what we're not seeing when we look at the media as portrayed in this country, we hear the story about, you know, about the what has taken place, creating a situation of bad guy being whatever type of terrorist acts are being taken place in those countries, and how we need to go in as the good guys. We saw the same thing in Libya. Yeah, there was a no-fly zone, and then they had the the evil government of Gaddafi that needed to be stopped, and how he was bombing his own people. And then it went from bombing his own people, bombing his own people, to where NATO and the U.S. government were bombing all of his people. So subsequently, people, what they did not see, they saw the good, supposedly this role of good guy, bad guy, where we weren't going to put any troops on the ground. We were going to create a no-fly zone. But in the process, we did more than put boots on the ground. We went in and started bombing an entire country. But here's the other part of this, where I'm getting to on the propaganda side, is that we didn't see this like what was taking place in Vietnam, Al. We didn't see this on television. We didn't see really what was taking place in, we didn't see this in the newspaper. We didn't see the deaths. We didn't see what was taking place, the horrors of war. We didn't see that. We were seeing this every day during the years of Vietnam. So what is being done, Al, is being covered up by propaganda. People are still turning on their 6 o'clock news in the morning. They're watching their traffic reports so they can make certain that they get to work on time, what cars have been speeding down the freeway and overturned, oil spills, things of this nature, and then looking at the entertainment news while they're missing the big picture, Al, of what is taking place in the world around them. Can't see the forest because of the trees.
Well, can I mention something from earlier? You're talking about Nazi Germany. Yeah, this quote came to mind. I'm going to paraphrase from the Nuremberg trials. Very relevant to what you're saying. One of the Nazis in the Nuremberg trials said that all you need to do to convince people to support war because most people in most countries do not support war is convince them that they're under attack and call the pacifists unpatriotic. It works the same in any country. That's what he said. And, you know, the United States learned from the Nazis. I mean, the CIA in 1948 took in a lot of Nazis and used them to spy against the Russians. And, you know, they never brought any Ukrainians up on war crimes like they did, you know, Poles and others, because they were using the Ukrainians in particular, who were geographically close to Russia and still under the sphere of the Soviet Union. They were using Ukrainian agents from the West to spy on them. So, you know, they were never brought to trial. Therefore, you have the descendants of these Ukrainian fascists who still glorify the war criminal Stefan Bandera, and they've took over in Kiev today. So people say, oh, that's an exaggeration. It's true that the Ukrainians collaborate with the Nazis, but they're not like that today. Well, these people call themselves the Adolf Hitler Brigade. You know, they're openly neo-Nazis, and the United States is backing them. Why is that? Because, again, they're using them as pawns against Russia. It's like a repeat of the Cold War. So history is repeating itself.
Al, I'm just going to make break here. Today we have Al Suarez. He's joining the program once again on Left Turn with Stuart Alexander. And today we're discussing the mainstream media, Facebook, and censorship. We were off the air for approximately 3 weeks or so. I think it was a break that was probably good for all of us. But anyway, we are very pleased to have Al joining the program once again. And Al, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Al, I'm just looking at it where it says a research study explains how U.S. media brainwashed the public. And just very briefly, it says the corruption in this country has reached such alarming levels, and the consequences when it comes to the direct harm that corruption inflicts on the population. So atrocious that for many years now I have been wondering if the only way a population can remain so passive is if it is subject to massive brainwashing. Given the increasingly blunt manner in which the ruling elite continues to engage in blatant acts of corruption and oppression, born our governments, I'm not certain if they had that incorrect, and corporatist collusion, if the population were not under the control of the mind-numbing corporate media conglomerate's propaganda right now we would have the equivalent of Occupy Wall Street 10 times the size of what it was at its height. So, you know.
Well, you know, I think that's over, what's the term? That's giving too much credit to the so-called mainstream media. Because if you actually look at opinion polls, the overwhelming majority of Americans do not believe what the mainstream media tells them. So we're in the information age. Ignorance is a choice. So most Americans know the government's unjust and know that the media is biased. You know, I talk about it in my media class all the time, or in my English class, you know, the students all agree, and the teacher doesn't, you know, counter what I'm saying. Everybody knows the media is biased. There's not even a attempt to brainwash there when it comes to the in much of the colleges of the country, because it's so obvious. But at the same time, you know, the Americans are complacent and fearful, and they feel powerless to do anything about it. And the only way to stop complacency, the only way to stop fear and feeling powerless is with activism, because the basis of activism is inspiration. That's what makes it effective, to inspire the masses to act upon what they already know. When the House of Commons, or whatever it was called in the pre-revolutionary days in the United States, you know, when it was under British control, before it became the United States, at that time they did a poll of the colonized people of the American settlers, and the actual British rulers were more popular in the days before the American Revolution than what the U.S. Congress is today. As a matter of fact, they conducted a poll of American people, and they put roaches as options, and roaches were more popular than Congress people. So it's not a question of, you know, is there enough consensus against the government? There's more than there's ever been. You know, it's really a waste of time, I think, activists trying to convince Americans that this is unfair. I mean, most of them will receive by laughter. It's obvious. You know, the young people, or one majority, don't vote. You know, the young people, they're the vanguard of revolutions. But the young people are too worried about paying back college debt. They're too worried about finding work. They're too worried about the Kardashians and reality TV and football. So there has to be a counterculture, you know, because it's not hard to talk to a young person about how unfair the government is. They'll agree with you. But then they'll go on and talk about the football game, and they're much more passionate about that. So there's got to be a counterculture.
Alan, you know, part of what I'm looking at here, why does it seem like people, and I know you're not a psychologist or anything like that, but where people have just become so passive about this. I mean, they see, you know, there's a world that's going on around them. I mean, a world of, I mean, events that are, you know, if you're a person that stays in the Bible all the time or whatever, you can say a biblical proportions, you know. But here are events that are taking place that we have never seen before. I mean, where we're on the verge of we're past a cold war, heading toward a hot war. We see things where governments are already, you know, testing nuclear armament, you know, preparing for the next, you know, showdown, and people don't even see any of this happen. They're not talking about it. Yeah, I mean, if you have a fight out in the street, Al, you go to everybody you see for the next day or so, and you'd be talking about this fight that you saw in the street.
Besides under the counter drugs that the youth take in mass, there is behavioral drugs that pacifies the youth. It's very intentional how the youth are targeted and given all these labels by psychologists or psychiatrists.
You say drugs?
Yeah, like prescribed drugs like Ritalin and stuff like that they're given out to the youth to pacify the youth, to prevent them from rebelling. That's a very deliberate thing.
How do they do that? You need to educate me now on that.
Well, you know, like all these labels they put in ADHD, you got to put them in special needs, you got to hold them down, you got to you know prescribe them drugs. I mean, they tried to do it to me when I was a teenager as well, because I was rebellious. But, you know, at least since the 90s, you've had this increase in, you know, drugging the teenagers and the youth in their 20s and pacifying them that way, you know, and the party culture and all that. I mean, I like to have a good time like the next guy, but, you know, to me, it's much important to go to a protest than to go to a party. You know, I'm going to one of the 5th of November
protests.
If you're talking about drugs,
it doesn't have anything to do with these chemtrails, does it?
I don't know a lot about the chemtrails, but what I do know is that the pharmaceuticals have too much power in this country.
I just had to throw that in there, Al.
All right. Well, in all seriousness, the pharmaceuticals have too much power in this country.
No, I was serious. Benefiting. I had to throw it in there, but I was serious.
No, the chemtrails, from what I heard, is a serious issue, but I have to study it more. But from what I know, you know, they've benefited tremendously from Obamacare, the pharmaceuticals.
Right.
This was an idea that was invented by Republicans and the pharmaceuticals in the 90s, which actually Clinton put a stop to, Bill Clinton. But, yeah, Obama's now, you know, taken on RomneyCare, or what was a Republican pharmaceutical idea, and made it his own. But, you know, that's not public health care. That's not the type of health care you see in Venezuela or in Europe. So, you know, it might work in Massachusetts, it might work in Canada, but it's not going to work, you know, throughout the country, you know, different cultures and different regions within the country. If you have public health care or health care provided by unions at some level, that could be a better alternative. But the pharmaceuticals are really targeting the youth. I mean, it's understandable somebody with a weak immune system who's an elder will need certain medicines. But this whole behavioral drugs thing, I'm not saying abolish all behavioral drugs. I'm not a Scientologist, but
right.
I'm just saying that it's prescribed to the wrong people too often. I think it's quite deliberate, not just for profit, but to pacify the youth. It's a very deliberate thing. So when you take away
I just
want to
get
on, be more conscious. Yeah.
I just want to get a little bit into part of this propaganda machine and what we are missing as a society. Because, you know, as I mentioned, we're missing a lot. I mean, we have global warming, and I'm quite certain you believe that global warming is happening, correct?
It's a scientific fact.
Okay, good. So, you know, we're on board right there. I mean, we understand that wars are taking place all over this country. We understand about how we are now living in a police state that we, you know, this is not really being, we're not seeing this on television, probably never see that on television. But, you know, getting into how propaganda is working, we have a lot of important, my wife, I love my wife, she loves flipping through the channel, she gave me the controls, I flip through the channels, because I don't want to sit on the couch with her while she watches that news.
You got to go watch Fox News and get a few laughs, right? Well, get a few laughs from those neocon artists over there.
Well, Al, within 3 hours, they repeat everything every 30 minutes. Al, here's another thing. I used to watch KFWB News, I think is KFWB News in Los Angeles, and they had some other news station. This is like going back around 30 years or so. And when I'm in my car, I don't turn on the radio. Al, I don't turn on the radio. I don't want to listen to no CDs. I don't want to listen to anything. That's my quiet time. But years ago, I would have supposedly the news on, and then every 15 minutes you get this little jingle, and then they repeat the same thing that you've been hearing all day. And Al, it got to the point where I was pulling my hair out because I'm moving anywhere from 5 to 10 miles per hour. I got like around 20 miles that are still ahead of me. I'm running late for work. And, I mean, here I'm listening to the same jingle every 15 minutes. Well, I was looking at her programming. And then I said, let me just see what's in this guide. And Al, as I flip through the guide, it says, how it's made, how things work, how it's made, how things work. And Al, I said, how can you devote an entire network where all they have is just two things that they have programmed for like 2 days? I mean, so, Al, that in itself, it seemed like is programming people just to give them a certain piece of information. And then there's another program that she watches which is, I think it has something to do with remodeling your house, building houses, something about switching.
And there's an illusion
it's on some home shopping. Not home shopping. What do you call it? Home building channel or something like that?
Home and shopping network. I don't know. But listen, Stuart, there's an illusion.
Al, it's the same thing all day long.
No, I know. It's persistent in the culture. And there's an illusion that they're maintaining also, that we're allowed to have a discourse. But they're limiting the discourse, you know. So the free thought or critical thinking is not encouraged. And there's this repetitive, you know, triviality that's pounded into the minds of the American people. And that in itself is also a way to pacify them. So that if something does come out like Snowden, you know, they say, well, this is a way to intimidate people. They're going to know that we're spying on them. The government wanted Snowden's revelations to come out. That's why the mass media talked about it so much. The government gave them the okay.
Now, back to what I was saying, how
you had 80% of Americans. I'm sorry, 90% of Americans supported Snowden, and at least 80% of Americans at one point supported Occupy Wall Street. So there wasn't even a question.
Right, they wanted
Americans
to cut that out real
activists.
Quick.
Right.
How many with Occupy Wall Street again?
No, I'm saying there was at least 80% at Occupy's height of American people in opinion polls. And a lot of them didn't even know exactly what Occupy was about, but they knew it was the government. And at least 80% were behind Occupy, and if you look at the opinion polls up to this day, there's nothing surprising about that. Okay, so there's no doubt there was ever a real revolutionary movement in this country like Occupy that was persistent, that the most people would support them. The question is, how would they support them? You know what I mean? Would they support them financially? Fortunately, you know, Occupy wasn't organized enough, didn't get enough money, and they didn't take money from corporations. But I think that if the American people are convinced that this movement's going to persist, they would back it financially, not just morally, and that could start a movement that could really start to try to make some changes.
So, you know, back to what I was mentioning in regards to when we look at the propaganda and what we're missing, we have, I believe, and of course you just confirmed that you believe in global warming. Here we see, when we look at the Arctic and we look at the ice caps, the way that they're melting, we had a 90-mile iceberg, 90 miles. I mean, how can you miss it? You can see it from
space.
That's
the distance,
you know,
of Key West to
Cuba. I mean, it breaks off. Al, it breaks off, and it's floating in the ocean. They showed it one day, and then
where
after that, they never showed it again. But the importance of that, Al, is here. You're talking about it's a major problem with global warming.
Stuart, where was that iceberg? Was that in the Arctic?
That was from the Antarctic.
Okay,
but
it was
90 miles long, miles, and then it wasn't even mentioned again. But here we have polar bears that are dying by the thousands. You know,
so they're getting skinnier
almost
too,
to the point of extinction because of global warming. Out, we have it affecting our climate,
and the most
our weather
the most
throughout the world. Here, California.
The conclusion you have to make from that is that it's man-made.
Uh-huh.
If it's man-made, then man can fix the problem.
Right. Well, we know global warming.
But you have these religious fanatics saying it's the end of the world, it's all inevitable, and that's just a bunch of religious nonsense. They have to look at the science,
Right. And talking about their doomsday predictions that, it was already foretold that it was going to take place, so, we can just sit on our duffs and just wait for it to happen. But, this is man-made.
That's pretty much a slave mentality.
When you have to think for a minute where, we're talking about gas prices going down, and, of course, we know that's because of the elections, gas prices going down, but you got to think for a minute of how we're still polluting our environment and not looking at alternative energies, about looking at alternative transportation rather than destroying our environment. But here,
we don't see that on a car or SUV.
We don't see that with this propaganda tool. The only thing we see is gas prices are going down. But we don't see the consequences of it. Again,
it's to promote capitalism.
What was that?
Supposedly, so it's easier for them to go to the voting stations. But it's all an illusion, this so-called democracy that we have.
Right. So anyway, that's what we're looking at when we talk about global warming. And Al, I'm just going to take another very quick break here. Once again, we have Al Suarez. He's joining us on the program today on Left Turn with Stuart Alexander. And our program today, we're discussing the mainstream media, Facebook, and censorship. And once again, Al, we want to thank you for joining the program today.
Thank you.
Al, we're going to move from global warming, because that is a very, very big topic, because we can do so much to protect the environment in regards to what is man-made. Right, currently, we have a drought that's taking place here in California. But the drought that's taking place, a lot of that has to do with the effects of climate change throughout the world. And, you know, this is something that we can do something about this. Al, moving on, when we look at the media and propaganda and how so much information is being shielded from the public.
The social media, I mean, I was banned from Facebook for a while, too, because of my activism. And I guess the government figured, well, we might as well not ban these people, we'll just spy on them, right? But,
right.
You know, there's so many people that have had their Facebooks erased, or now they're getting hacked and they have to change their password. And all this is not coincidental. This is all orchestrated, you know?
Well, the thing I wanted to mention in regards to Facebook is how when people, even when it comes to certain things about climate change and global warming, how much of that is being removed by Facebook these days. Not that you're necessarily attacking any corporations or whatever, but here you're laying out some facts. You're laying out information. You're sharing information. And the next thing you know, you're looking for a post either has been deleted or it's just not there anymore. But, Al, when we look at, when you consider almost half the world now is using Facebook, and a lot of people don't use Facebook because, you know, there are some inherent problems.
I heard like 70% of Americans use it, just that or Twitter.
Yeah. Answer this question for me. Why are so many people now, you see countless people are saying, I don't use Facebook, and when you ask them, do you have a Facebook account? Or myself, I'm in the automobile business, I ask them, do they have an email account? I say, well, you must have an email account because you have Facebook. No, I don't use Facebook. Why is it so many people are opposed to Facebook? And it's probably some obvious reasons. What do you
think? Lack of privacy, and not necessarily from the government, but, you know, the friends of friends of friends, somebody they don't know can go in their private albums with their family and comment and things like that. So people feel that it's invasion of their privacy.
To what degree is the government watching, looking at what's taking place over Facebook?
What do you think that Obama was
50%, 70%, or 100%? I would say 100%.
What do you think? What do you think that Obama was speaking with Zuckerberg about behind closed doors, the founder of Facebook? I mean, it's obvious.
Yeah,
there was a cooperation between them and Google and the NSA, and these are things that Snowden, Greenwald, and others have been exposing for some time. And, you know,
right.
I say I have nothing to hide, and that I'm willing to face up. But, you know, there's federal laws, for example, lobsters. If you take a picture with a lobster that's too big, you can go to jail for a felony. Under federal law. So there's little things here or there, and they don't necessarily want to convict people, but they want to blackmail people and use things that's from their Facebook. And, you know, the NSA was spying on Congress people and spied on Obama when he was a congressman. And not all this is so that they could later on make sure they get into the presidentials and he could control them with blackmail. They don't have to assassinate them anymore like Kennedy. They can just control them with blackmail. And
yeah.
They want to do it with average citizens as well and use it to try to squash dissent and infiltrate movements like they did Occupy. So that's what they've been doing. I mean, COINTELPRO went back in the 70s. That's what they did with the Black Panthers. I mean, they infiltrate these movements, and they're infiltrating social media as well. They want to privatize
right.
the Internet, but they haven't done it so far because they like that you have access to so many people that they can spy on, you know? And, you know, I just say be vigilant, but don't be paranoid. You know what I mean? Don't let them control you, you know, like every action you're going to do, you can think twice. Like, no, just be who you are, but also be discreet about what you're doing, you know.
Now, we can see a lot of what is taking place over in Europe, and people are not aware that much of what has taken place in Europe and in the Far East and even the Middle East, we're not even receiving 5% of it in this country. We have more information available to us, avenues for information, than anywhere else on the planet, and we receive less information of people anywhere else on the planet.
Well, we get disinformation too, right?
Pardon me?
We get disinformation, plenty of disinformation.
Yeah,
as
exactly.
Well.
Exactly. And our listeners must understand that much of the information is to always plant that seed of bad guy, good guy, bad guy. And
right.
I was mentioning to you a few weeks ago, and Al, I might mention that you were correct when we were talking about the incursion that had taken place between Russia and Georgia. This was in 2008. I thought it was under the watch of Obama, and you were very correct. It happened just near the end of the administration for Bush. But what took place was, again, where the U.S. and NATO was trying to, you know, build their defense shield, supposedly defense shield against Iran. But what they're doing is trying to line the whole border of Russia with weapons of mass destruction, right there on the border of Russia. Well, we could see what took place during that incursion between Russia and Georgia in 2008. It was in August of 2008, and then Russia, they sent their troops in, and they quickly moved in and took control of that region. That was the what was it? It was Mikhail Sakharov. I can't even pronounce his name. Saakashvili, where he was the president at that time, and he had ordered troops to go into the eastern area of Georgia, and then Russia stopped that.
Well, you're talking
but
about
here, the U.S.
The border with Russia and the Georgians were in Iraq. You're talking about Ossetia. That was the disputed region between Georgia and Russia at that time. And the Georgians,
right,
a small country, assumed because they helped the United States and Iraq, the United States was going to back them, and they could be free to provoke the Russians, but they were wrong.
Exactly.
The United States backed off, and the Russians did go into Georgia.
Right. Because otherwise they would have been looking at
a
direct conflict with Russia.
Right.
But see,
so the Georgians
here was something that
they
the
were
news media...
promises from Bush. Just
the news media, what does
the
news media do?
To support them in their fight against the Stalinists, but that backfired as well. So there's been false promises from the West many times, and I feel that the junta that's in Kiev right now, they're going to be overwhelmed as well.
The
promises
Al,
from NATO and from the United States aren't going to be kept there either.
Let me get my question now.
All right, go ahead.
My question is there a connection of what took place there in Georgia and what you see how they're making Russia to be the bad guy when the same, a similar situation has taken place there in the Ukraine?
No, I think that Bush actually was extremely, I wouldn't say extremely diplomatic, but far more diplomatic than Obama on that issue. I mean, Bush never even fathomed making sanctions against Putin, making sanctions against Russia. I mean, he would have thought that was, you know, suicidal. Disastrous.
Right.
Obama's far more, far worse than Bush when it comes to international diplomacy. When it comes to Russia, I never thought I'd see the day that the United States would pressure Europe to make sanctions against Russia. One thing is against Iran, but against a nuclear power like Russia.
My question is there a push by NATO and the U.S. to use these other smaller governments to be able to push Russia into an armed conflict between the superpowers?
Well, out of all the former Soviet Union countries, with the exception of Russia, Ukraine is the largest. Although Ukraine is pretty much split in two now because the eastern part are trying to separate from the western part, and you know, they're resisting the fascist incursions from Kiev. But And there also is internationalist brigade, mind you. There's internationalist people from different countries that are coming to defend the eastern Ukrainians, the ethnic Russians, from the fascist onslaught. But, besides Ukraine, yes, smaller countries, in the Caucasus, not just Georgia, countries that used to be under the Ottoman Turks as well. Chechnya, for example. These are small regions or countries that the CIA has been involved with for some time. And that involvement continued long after the Cold War. And NATO's continued in their planting of bases into Eastern Europe. And I pointed this out to Ruthann the other day, how sad it is, the position right now of the Polish government, if you look at the history, because the Polish government is inviting the United States to maintain its military bases there and its NATO bases there at the border of Ukraine. And they're having very good relations now with the fascists in Ukraine that they condemned only a couple years ago along with the EU, which of course is understandable because these same fascists who, worship Stefan Bandera, a few decades back when Bandera was around, they were the ones that were convincing the Polish minority in Ukraine to stay and then massacred them along with the Jews. So the Polish population of Ukraine was decimated by these fascists. Their ancestors and their ideology is anti-Polish, anti-Jewish, Russophobic. That's the very fundamental mentality of these guys that took power in Kiev by a coup backed by Western countries. So it's very sad that the Polish government, against the will, obviously, of the overwhelming majority of its people, is going along as a slave of the United States, along with many EU countries. It's not even a question anymore of are they junior partners, like I talked about in my article.
Junior partners.
Now they're pretty much
slaves of the U.S. Yeah,
no,
junior
they're not
slaves.
Even, they just accept the demands of the empire against the will of their people, against their own interests, against their own history, and it's just a betrayal.
Right. Al, what I'm looking at is we have looked at Georgia, we have looked at the Ukraine, but part of what I'm looking at here is this is what we're talking about right now. Every person that lives in this country should be exposed to this information. And they're not. They're not being exposed to this information. Here we saw just recently how the mainstream media orchestrated a cover-up of all the facts and everything, the investigation of what took place with the Malaysian airline 17 that was shot down, and quickly turned it around and started placing the blame on one country before even the investigation was complete. And we saw
even
in Germany.
That are admitting that it had to have been from an airplane that no Eastern Ukraine has access to, which of course Russia didn't do. So the only possible people that could have put a plane up there and shot it down were the Western Ukrainians, which makes me think that this had to have been a false flag. As usual, a false flag is set up to prepare the people for war against the Eastern Ukrainians. I don't know if against Russia, they could start World War III, but against the Eastern Ukrainians to continue to support the onslaught there. But it didn't work because the Malaysians said, wait a minute, I don't see any evidence of this. And now finally Europeans are saying, looks like it was from an airplane. It was an Eastern Ukrainian. So, of course, you don't hear about that in the New York Times.
Right. But now, why is it, what was that flight that went down in New York? It was years ago. Flight 800, I think it was. And we heard this on television for almost a year or so after it went down. And of course, this was right there on the shores of the U.S. And they were speculating that it was shot down and like that. But Al, isn't this something that we should still be seeing on the news rather than to be looking at how the weather is going to be or what is taking place with traffic on the freeways or whatever? When people look at the 6:30 news, when they look at CNN, when they look at MSNBC, of course we know it's
not
even
a news channel.
Al, is this relevant news? This is relevant news.
It's irrelevant news.
About 300 people being shot down, that's irrelevant?
No, what I'm saying is the way that they're portraying it, and if you look at the relevance
in
order of importance, What's important that World War III could happen tomorrow? We could go back to the Stone Age, or some people got shot. Some people got shot. Report on it, but don't emphasize on it so much. Ignore the other issues that are way more important to our survival as a human species. It takes us back to the Einstein quote, right? When they asked him what weapons would we use in World War III, he said, "I don't know what weapons would we use in World War III, but I do know in World War IV it'd be sticks and stones." So we're back in the time of the Cold War. I mean, what's going on in Ukraine? I mean, this could be the end. The environment, another issue. This could be the end. All our coastal cities could be gone and underwater. I think that's a little important than things they talk about on the TV, on the so-called mainstream media.
I'm just going to make one more quick break, and then we have approximately 10 more minutes to go here. We do have Al Suarez. He's joining the program today. He's a political commentator and social activist, also a writer. He has written books in the past, and I'll have him to share, the name of those books. But he is joining us today on the mainstream media, Facebook, and censorship. And Al, once again, I'd like to thank you for joining the program.
Thanks so much, Stuart.
Al, one of the other areas that I believe that we should be seeing every day, first of all, I'm going to say this. I believe what is taking place in Syria and the way that we are attacking that government, it's a sovereign government. It is completely illegal operation. What is taking place by NATO in the U.S., it's an illegal operation. But, Al, should not this country be seeing every day many of the atrocities that are taking place right there in Syria? Because, I mean, here U.S. aircraft are going into that area and bombing. They're bombing innocent civilians there every day, like what took place in Libya. Al, again, propaganda. We're not seeing this. We should be seeing this.
Putin was promised when NATO and the United States intervened in Libya that they would not do a coup d'etat, that they would just make sure that civilians were protected and have a known flying zone, kind of like it did in the 90s in Iraq, although that would also kill a lot of civilians with embargoes and even the no-fly zone. Sometimes those bombs killed civilians. But, of course, the United States almost immediately went back on their word and started trying to assassinate Gaddafi, which they ended up finally being able to do. So this time around with Syria, Russia said, no, we're going to implement our veto. We're not going to believe what the United States says, and we're going to prevent the United States from doing any type of intervention in Syria because they could use that to assassinate Assad, which is exactly what they're trying to do with going after ISIS. Not necessarily assassinate his person yet, but they're going after oil refineries. They're going after food reserves that belong to the Syrian government. And now ISIS is in areas that never been before in the north, in western Kurdistan. They've reconciled with al-Nusra and other groups, so they're stronger than ever. They're gaining fronts in Iraq. So if this is really an attack on ISIS, why are they still being able to go about? And they're going to try to use that now to justify ground troops. What they really should be doing is supporting the Kurds, and they're the people that are really fighting the ISIS. And Turkey, of course, are major supporters of ISIS as well. There's got to get diplomatic pressure behind Turkey.
Well, I mean, again, I don't think the American public is being told everything that they should be told about ISIS. And, of course, you probably agree with me there, because I believe that it's a U.S. operation. I mean, I ask this question all the time. Where is the money coming from? We need to follow the trail of the money. I mean, here
these are
working people, Al. Al,
the
these are working people, and they got millions of dollars.
The Turks the Turks and the Saudis, and the Turks historically have always been middlemen. The Turks and the Saudis right now, who are the main financiers of ISIS, they're nothing but the middlemen for the United States. They're using them, to try to cover up their financing of ISIS, which is probably still trickling down to this day, let alone, them grabbing resources or Iraqi weapons. I mean, there's finance behind this as well, because initially, of course, they were using them against Assad. And then they cross the line.
I mean, Al, when I think about it, I could take half of the working population of this country, half of the working population as far as when I look at income levels, and half the American working class population could not afford to bankroll and finance that operation of ISIS. And here, these guys are spending millions of dollars.
Many of us are trying to figure out
how can we afford, you know, milk and bread for our family.
They're selling journalists to ISIS. They sold a journalist to Al-Nusra and they let them go. But ISIS, they're just extremely barbaric. So the ones that they sold to ISIS, they got beheaded already. British citizens, American citizens. I mean, you know, that's how they show their appreciation for the help. You know, just like in Libya. You know, they're helping Al-Qaeda and then they killed our ambassador. I mean, it's insane that we keep helping these people.
Well, I mean, what we see with these beheadings, and of course they're not doing it because as much as we saw in the past where the beheadings were on TV and they were saying, all right, they're ready to do another beheading, and they have the person with the orange suit in the background and like that. But, you know, here the American public start again. They were saying we're not buying into it, you know, because
what they're doing
start
is they're imitating the Guantanamo detainee jumpsuits. So they believe
right.
in an eye for an eye. So they're trying to imitate as much as possible what the U.S. has done to Muslims. So this is really the violence that the U.S. has inflicted on others coming back to them, you know. The chicken's coming home to roost, unfortunately.
Do you see any connection with ISIS and the U.S. government?
Well, a lot of these guys were tortured in Guantanamo, or at least held in Guantanamo, let go and sent back to their countries. I mean, the head of Al-Qaeda in Benghazi was a former inmate in Guantanamo, and he was supported by the CIA after being released from Guantanamo to topple Gaddafi. So, you know, maybe some of these prisoners that were in Guantanamo were not actually tortured, were actually recruited by the U.S. government and sent back to their countries to stabilize those governments.
Well, on this subject of the ISIS and, you know, propaganda that we always receive with war, and of course they've been using ISIS as a means of, oh, we need to attack this country and that country, or here's another country that ISIS is in, so we need to go and start bombing them
as
well.
Yeah, they're going to attack the Vatican. That's, you know, the Vatican, they're going to attack Russia. I mean, it's just they're just talking out of their mind. I don't know what.
But let me ask you, do you believe the mainstream media what we see, is they using all of this as a means of selling fear to control the public?
Absolutely. I mean, it's like Ferguson. They're using that to try to get, you know, the whites to buy up guns and, you know, feel afraid of the blacks. You know, I live in a neighborhood
right.
that's predominantly black. I feel completely safe here. As a matter of fact, I'm more fearful of the cops. So, you know, they use things to keep people fearful, keep people in place. The perfect example is Ebola. Where's the endemic? This is what I keep asking. Where is the Ebola endemic in the U.S.? How many U.S. citizens are we talking about here? Two? Three? Where's the epidemic? What's the epidemic they're talking about?
Right.
They're all using it as fear.
Well, they already have the cure for it, but will not create the profits that they need to have. And I'm talking about cure they need to cure those thousands that are there.
They probably have the cure
and...
for AIDS, the cure for cancer already.
The
people that came up with those cures have probably been taken out already because the pharmaceuticals,
right.
they're the ones that are going to reap the benefits. And they have all the power. The pharmaceuticals are like a mafia as well.
And much of what I was talking about in regards to ISIS, I haven't completely read this article, ISIS and War Propaganda. The mainstream media is selling fear to control the public. So that's something that we'll discuss in the future. Al, I have three more minutes. I just want you to share a little bit about the books that you have written. And if you can take a couple of minutes, and also what you are doing as a political activist there in the state of Florida.
Sure. I mean, I plan to go to the 5th of November event that is hosted by Anonymous in southern Georgia soon. Not here in Florida because, unfortunately, there's some members of Anonymous that, you know, they don't want me there. But, you know, so I've written a couple books. And if you read the first one, you'll understand why there's certain people, certain activist groups that don't like me. I mean, there's been a whole discrediting campaign against many leaders that were in the movement. My first book is called Solidarity Forever, The Struggle of an Occupier. It discusses the Occupy movement from within, from my own experiences with the movement and the crisis with the movement and how it was disassembled. The second book is called The Unfinished Revolution, which talks about the principles of Occupy and how we could make a better movement. And you can find me on Ruthann Page, on Stuart's page, on Facebook, Al Suarez, S-U-A-R-E-Z. And my books can be found
Al,
on
you know, I think
and Amazon.
I think when the revolution happens, when it finally happens in the U.S., I think you're going to be right there in Washington. Of course, it won't be the Washington that we know today.
Yeah, I don't think any manic tribes are going to be coming in like with the fall of Rome, but the us revolutionaries will definitely be there to bring down the empire.
Al, once again, I want to thank you for joining the program. I know I will be anticipating to have you to join us in the future. Once again, I want to always thank Ruthann for making this program possible. And again, we're going to be asking our listeners to join us once again next week on Left Turn with Stuart Alexander. Last thing I will mention, you can always call into 718-664-6436. 718-664-6436. What was that, Al?
No, I'm saying we get some callers next time. Be good, too.
Okay, thanks again. Look forward to having
Thank
our
you.
Listeners to join us next week. Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you guys very much.